Good morning, everybody. I'd like to thank the sponsors this morning for today's share. First of all, Shalom Huberfelt is sponsoring. There's a number of yahrzeits which are really, boy by yom, this is the day we have to attribute to a lot of the family members who unfortunately perished in the Shoah. Their names are Moshe Aaron Ben Yaakov Yitzchak, Hashem Yinkom Damai, his grandfather, Brindel Bas Yaakov Yosef HaKoin, Hashem Yinkom Damai, Avram Yoshua ben Moshe Aaron Hashem Yikom Damai, his uncle, Mordechai Yeshaya ben Moshe Aaron Hashem Yikom Damai, and also Shmuel David ben Moshe Aaron Hashem Yikom Damai, another uncle. And just, you know, Baruch Hashem, the family continues to flourish, but it's tragic that we have to, that unfortunately we in Klal Yisrael have so many yahrzeits on the same day. That's who we are, unfortunately. I want to also thank Ed Klar, who's sponsoring for his mother's yahrzeit, Sarah Feger Bas Moshe. Ed, the actual yahrzeit is today itself,
tonight.
This evening. And thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing the learning with us this morning. Also, Ira Weger sponsoring the Ili Nishmas Shlomo Ben Yitzchak. His father's yahrzeit was last week, Monday. God willing, it should be the Alias Nishmasai as well. And for Simcha, for Mr. Nissen Mayel is sponsoring in honor of his great grandson's bar mitzvah, Binyamin Shwazinski. Metz Hashem, we should have many, many more to celebrate all together. Metz Hashem, Metz Hashem for many years to come. So let's start. This is a fascinating topic, fascinating on all perspectives. The reason why this is so fascinating is this is an inconsequential detail, but it's so consequential. So here's how it starts. If you look at the entire Torah in general, there's two parts. The Torah is all divided into two different parts. One is what we call the narrative, and the other part is the commandments. And it's very useful to think about that in that respect, in terms of thinking about the whole Torah and dividing it up into those different categories. So for example, when we read through Bereishis, it's useful to notice that 97% of Bereishis is narrative. It's a story. There happens to be a few times where the Torah will step out of narrative and say, Al Kain, therefore B'nai Yisrael will eat the Gid Anoshe. Right, as an example. That'll be where there's no longer a story being told, but a mandate being given. When you move into Sefer Shmos, a lot of Sefer Shmos is a narrative, is a story. Then we take a stop, because we have this, the Truma and Tzaveh, where we have the command of the Mishkan, and we move back into story, and then we move back into command, right, into mandate and narrative. It's interesting that in all of Sefer Vayikra, there are only two stories. It's interesting. Part of the reason why it's harder to have a grasp on it is because most of it is commandments. Most of Vayikra's commandments, and there's only two exceptions. What are those two exceptions, by the way, in Sefer Vayikra? What was that? Not a matter of you is one of the stories. The other story is that's by Midbar. The only other story in Sefer Vayikra is Mekosha Sheitzim, right? So it's the person who gathers the wood. Those are only two stories in the Sefer Vayikra, which is fascinating. I mean to say that if we look at the entire book, most of his commandments, Bamidbar is more mottled. Bamidbar is more, we'll call it this, there's different aspects of it within Bamidbar, which is why it's interesting. If we look at, let's say, for instance, yesterday's parasha, almost all of Bahaloscha was a story. And in fact, there were 12 separate stories in Bahaloscha, which is what makes it an unbelievable parasha to study. But when you move on to Shlach, Shlach is complex. Shlach, we have, of course, the lion's share of the parasha deals with the Meraglim, the spies. So we know that part of it. But a lot of times we don't focus necessarily on the fact that it also has commandments. And it's interesting because a command, technically speaking, isn't really time-based necessarily. Meaning to say, I'll give you an example. Parshas Chukas starts with, what's the beginning of Parshas Chukas? The Paradum, that's what's called Zos Chukas HaTorah, right? When was the command of Chukas HaTorah actually given in chronology?
In Mara.
It was given in Mara, actually in Parshas B'Shalach, just after they leave the Kriyas Yamsov. Sham Som Loi Choyk U'Mishpat V'Sham Nisol. That's when they were given the Chukas HaTorah. But when does the Torah deign to tell us about what the content of that law is? Well, that's put later on in Parshas Chukas, which means we have to question why it is that certain mandates are stuck into certain stories. Fair? Right? The story is, by nature, we have to find some sort of chronological sequence. And most of the time, there is a chronological sequence. Sometimes not. But when it comes to the mandates, the mitzvahs, we have to say to ourselves, how do these mitzvahs relate to the actual narrative that they were wedged in between, or our book casing, or framing. That's the question we have to ask ourselves. So it's interesting. Immediately after the narrative, the story of the Meraglim, the first mitzvah immediately after the Chayit Meraglim, because the rest of the parasha is mitzvahs, is almost challah. Good guess. Here's what it says. So take a look in source one. By Midbar Tesvav Perik Tesvav Pasuk Aleph. By the Baruch Shem Moshe Lemor, Hashem speaks to Moshe saying, "Here's the commandment." Daber el b'nei Yisrael. Please speak to b'nei Yisrael. Are there any extras floating around? If that's all right. Paul could have one. Thank you so much. Oh, and there's more over here. This just makes it more difficult to reach them. I'm sorry. Here we go. If anybody needs any extras, okay. Thank you so much. But daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amart aleihem. Speak to Israel and tell them, "Ki saval eretz Moshe v'yaseichem." When you arrive in the land of your dwelling, Asher ani nosen alchem, which I'm giving to you, v'asisem yishel Hashem oila oizevach, when you bring a sacrifice, lefale neder oil binadava, or you're going to now fulfill a donation that you had said you're going to make, oy b'moadeichem, or whether it be that you're bringing the sacrifice on your moed, because people would have to bring korbanos when they go to on the festival, la'asos reich nichoach la'Hashem min abakor min atzon, whether it comes from the cattle, the sheep. Then, in that instance, that was the if. The then of the sentence is, "V'yikriva makriva korbanon la'Hashem incha solis yisaron balul ba'shemen revi'is lahin shemen v'yayin la'nesech revi'is lahin taseh al ho'elo al azav al keves la'echad." When you bring your sacrifice, you now need to bring along with it a mincha, which is a meal offering, and a wine libation, which is what's called a nesech. So, it sounds like the Torah is saying, this is the command, that korbanos have to be accompanied with wine libations and menachos and meal offerings. Meal offerings often consist of generally flour, a little bit of oil, and a little bit of frankincense or spice on them, depending on what kind of the meal offering. A wine libation is just a certain amount of wine which is poured onto the mizbeach, right? So these are part of the sacrificial service. And you say to yourself, is this the most important thing that B'nai Yisrael needs to hear now? Or maybe we can even frame the question differently and say, is this the most important thing that we, the reader, need to see right after learning the Meraglim, because we, depending on who the audience is of the Torah at this point in time, right? Why is it that this is what the Torah sees fit as to be the first question? And worded differently, the question is, why wine? Without the H. Okay? So why wine? Why is it that the Torah sees fit that the first commandment is wine? It happens to be interesting, as Dr. Yeager pointed out, the next commandment is challah, which is when you come to the land of Israel, bake challah every Friday. No. Challah is always misused word. The word challah in the Torah means that when you're baking a certain amount of grain, you need to take out what's called challah. Okay, so that's the commandment of challah. That's the next commandment. The next one talks about what's called avodah zarah b'shogeg, which you serve avodah zarah in a state of not of lack of knowledge, the korban you bring in finally tzitzis. Those are the four commandments following the Meraglim. And we have to sort of ask ourselves, what is Hashem putting on the table? Why are these four cards there? But more specifically for us, what is it about the fact that we need to know about wine libations of all things in the world right after we just heard about the Meraglim? And who is the audience? So, folks, what do you say? Why is this what Hashem deems worthy? Or to tell Moshe Rabbeinu right now, at this critical moment in national history, and the calamity which is ensuing, and the 40 years in the desert, and everybody's crying and weeping, and why do we need to hear about wine libations of all things in the world? Kelsey? Oh, okay. So what Yossi is saying is something which is, I think, the most famous idea which is attached to this. And by the way, we're going to go into very, very unfamous ideas in a moment, which are going to be famous right after the shir. Okay, so I'm very excited to get to that. But the most famous idea, the most well-known idea, is what Rashi says. Rashi and Dr. Silverstein have the following observation. That is, Rashi says in a very brief source, in source 2, ki savo. The answer is biser lohem sheyi konsu laaretz. He's telling them, you're going to get into the land. What's the first pasuk introducing the wine libations is? When you arrive in the land, which I'm going to take you to, then you bring wine libations. So what's the point of this parasha? The point of this parasha is, you've just lost your ticket. Don't worry, you'll get in second round, right? You just got kicked out of essentially getting, you just lost your license to enter the land of Israel. Don't worry, I'm going to give you mitzvahs which are applicable only in the land of Israel. So don't worry about it. That's what seems to be happening over here. Brilliant, right? So it's essentially, the audience is, according to Rashi, the audience is Bnei Israel right now. What's the message is? Don't give up hope. You know that you're going to enter the land of Israel because I'm going to tell you, I'm still giving you mitzvahs which are applicable in the land of Israel. That's what the Rashi says in four short words. Tibby. So Tibby's making a good point, is that that's all very nice, but I'm not going there. Right, so that I'm going to come back to it. We're going to get to the Arachaim. He's going to deal with that in a second. Dr. Yeah, yeah.
Raglan tripped up with grapes.
Oh, okay.
So this could be one type of tikkun rectification.
Okay, so hold that thought for a second. Remember, Rashi hasn't even gone there yet, but it is interesting to note that there seems to be grapes in their sin. We'll get there later, okay? So hold on to that. Hold on to that thought for a second. Okay. But that's let's not lose that. But I want just on a basic level over here, Rashi seems to be saying, just the fact that this command is only applicable in the land of Israel, by the way, big question mark behind that, but it seems that Rashi is assuming that this message is only applicable in the land of Israel, so therefore essentially the message which is being conveyed is, you're going to go into the land of Israel, here I'm giving you mitzvahs which are applicable in the land of Israel. What Rashi does not seem to address is, why? Right? At this point in time, it could be any mitzvah, it could be payah, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu could say, remember that when you harvest your fields, leave the back left corner for the Aniyim, which is a mitzvah which is applicable in the land of Israel. He could say Shemitah at this point in time. So the specific choice of mitzvah is more arbitrary in Rashi's perspective at this point in time. But the notion of entering the land of Israel is what's the primary. So just to hone Rashi in a little bit more, just to sort of to pull Rashi to a little more of a laser point, I'd like to just investigate the words of Rav Shimon Schwab. Rav Shimon Schwab has a sefer on the Torah called Mayan Beis HaShoeva, which is always fabulous. He is one of the most creative thinkers in the last generation. There's very, very few people who are as creative as he is in his thoughts. And he says a very interesting thing. He's taking the general approach of Rashi, and his point is the following. Let's take a look on the source 3, top of page 2. He basically points out that these commands, and a mincha or a nesach, these accompanying, we'll call it, you know, accompanying korbanos, are made of three essential ingredients. And they are wine, grain, and oil, right? A mincha has to be grain and oil, right? And a libation is made of wine, which means to say that the three primary ingredients that we're being told about over here are essentially grapes, olives, and grain, right? Those are the three ingredients, which is interesting because those are, in fact, what we always talk about. Well, let's look in the second paragraph. He says the following: "Va'inyan she'ikar gidulei Eretz Yisrael hem dafka elu hagimel." Well, when we talk about the main products of the land of Israel, it's really these three things: "Varak elu k'suvim v'parshas v'yam shema." What we just said a few minutes ago in Kriyas Shema, or what we're going to say in a few minutes in Kriyas Shema. Not even the seven species of the land of Israel. So one second. Let's just put it where that comment is. What he's saying is, as we say, what does Hashem say? I'm going to give you Dagon Cha v'Sirosh Cha v'Yitzarecha. Dagon Cha is your grain. I just lost my train of thought. Tirosh Cha v'Yitzarecha. Right. So that's the wine and the oil, which are being expressed in the... So when Hashem says, if you do the mitzvahs in the land, I'll give you what you need. What are the three things we need? Grain, olives, and wine. Which means that those are... If we sort of have a pyramid of, you know, what's the most important things, these are at the top, even above the seven species. They're sort of the basics, right? So Hashem is giving us a mitzvah, which is now amalgamating those three basics. And he takes it to what's the essential meaning behind this. So he has a very interesting thought. He says, from the comma onwards, Yeshlama Shinei Amru Chazal Binyan Etzadas. Chazal tell us in the Gemara in Brachos regarding what was the tree of knowledge which Adam and Eve ate from. She'en atinok yodeh likros abba v'ima ad she'yitom tam dagon. He says that we know that a child reaches a stage of calling to their parents when they start eating solid grains. It's interesting that the two are put together. There's a notion that grain relates to das, to knowledge. And there's one opinion that the Eitz HaDa'as Tovara is, in fact, grain. Kind of shifts the perspective in our minds, you know, when everybody's drawing that nice big brown trunk and green leaves and red apples, right? So according to Chazal, what may not have been that picture, it might have been the waving barley in the wind, right? It's a little bit of a different perspective. Nonetheless, that's one of the options. Why? Because it's the notion of das. Grain relates to knowledge. Harei dagon meramez al chokhma. V'tiroish meramez al simcha. We know that wine relates to happiness, as the pasuk says in Tehillim, v'yayin yisamach levav enosh. That the wine has the potential, remember that's an important word, yeah, potential, to make people happy. We know that we say Shira to Hashem over the cups of wine. The Yitzar and the oil merames al or. And we know that oil represents light. Vahainu he'aros anayim b'torah. That means to say illumination and knowledge in Torah. Vahainu v'ayom shema tishmu mitzvah. That's why we say every day in Shema. If we will listen to Hashem, oz v'asavta d'ganucho v'siroshcho v'yisorecho, sheba'achilascho mehem tekabel elu agimul segulos. That Hashem will give us these three things, which will give us three options, which is Shanasana Gosh Baruch Ba'elu Gimal Peros Shel Eretz Yisrael. He'll give us the knowledge, he'll give us simcha, and he'll give us or insight. So apparently these three things are metaphors for three elements of our closest spiritual closeness to Hashem, which are represented in these three basic food sets. And so therefore, when Hashem says you're going to enter in the land of Israel, he's giving us a mitzvah which actually takes those three elements and uses them for a higher purpose. That's the way that's why he's doing it. So according to Rav Schwab, he's essentially taking Rashi's idea, but he's advancing it to why specifically this command. Just a very fascinating idea. It gives a little more perspective, right, Yossi? So we're on the same page. That was idea number one. It's interesting, and this is just a quotation I found from Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela had a book which he wrote called A Long Walk to Freedom. It's interesting, they wrote an abridged version of the book, which I think really undoes the... if you know what I'm saying. If you can't read The Long Walk to Freedom. Anyways, here's the quotation from the book. I've walked that long road to freedom. I've tried not to falter. I've made missteps along the way, but I have discovered the secret that after climbing a great hill, one only finds that there are many more hills to climb. I think in life, this is such a true statement. There's never cruise control, right? I have taken a moment here to rest, to steal a view of the glorious vista that surrounds me, to look back on the distance I have come, but I can only rest for a moment, for with freedom comes responsibilities, and I dare not linger, for my long walk is not ended. I think a lot of us feel that about life, and this is what he's saying is that over here, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying is, yeah, you took the wrong turn. At this fork, folks. Right? B'nai Yisrael, you definitely made the wrong decision over here. But let me tell you something. Look ahead. Right? There's no time to sit and wallow. There's no self-pity allowed right now. I'm going to tell you that you're going to enter in the land of Israel. It's going to be a long walk. It's going to be 40 years worth of walking, 39 at this point in time. But when you get there, this is the next step. Know that you're going somewhere. This is the notion which Hashem is conveying to them. So the halacha itself is the framework for the psychology for survival, essentially. Which is what Rashi and Rav Shraba convey. Brilliant. So now, Tibby made a good point, and that is that that's all very nice and well for my kids. But what about me? Right, let's be honest. Hashem just said that all of you, anybody between the age of 20 and 60, basically get comfortable in the desert, right? Because you're not going into the land of Israel. So that's not very fair, is that, right? Meaning to say, here Hashem says, okay, when you go into the land of Israel, you're going to have all of this. Well, that's my kids, right? You know, it kind of sounds like if you go back a few generations to those people who arrived on the shores of a new country here, be it America, and they worked at these low wages jobs just to make sure that their children got the education necessary so that they could do well. And they knew that they never really make, some of them did. But a lot of people who knew that they really would never make it. It was all about the next generation. There's almost something like something we're hearing over here, where don't worry, your children will go in. But it's more than that. The Aruch HaKadosh says something unbelievable. Unbelievable. This I've learned this Gemara, and I never put this together. Never connected it to what's happening here. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, quoting source 5, the Aruch HaKadosh, he says, Od nire lamar, ki omro noisein lachem. Take a look back at the Pasuk. Look, in source 1 again. What is the command? What is the framework of commandment over here? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'adivarishom ha-Moshe le'mor, Tavav v'nei Yisrael v'mat aleihem, Ki savo la'eretz Moshe o'esechem, Asher ani nosein lochem. When you enter the land which I am giving to you, nosein is which tense? Present. Wait a second. I'm not giving it to you. I'm giving it to your children. Asher ani etein lochem sounds a little more truthful, right? Why is it that I am giving to you in present tense? That's Aruch HaKadosh notes. By the way, the Or HaChaim is just a moment, just appreciate how brilliant the Or HaChaim is. Or HaChaim will move from what we'll call pshat into machshava into kabbalah, all in one trajectory. So here he says, look, the pasuk doesn't read. Why is it I'm giving to you in presence? So he quotes Chazal and he says the following. Back in source 5, he says he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin Perek Chelek. The Gemara is asking, how do we know that the Tchias Hameisim, that there is going to be resurrection of the dead? Dichsiv Asher Nishba Hashem Lavosechem Loseis Lochem. Hashem is going to swear to give you the land which he swore to your fathers to give to you. Lo neemar, el lohem. It's not to give it to you, to the forefathers, but even to them, meaning to say he's going to give it to the children, adkan, which means to say that essentially, that means to say that they are part of the process of getting the land. What is he saying to them? He's saying, I'm giving you this land now. But wait a second, aren't we being buried in the desert? So Hashem says, don't worry, death is not final. That's essentially what's happening over here. This is one of the ramazim, one of the hints in the Torah, that death is not final. There's going to be resurrection. So you may be concerned that this is the end of the journey. Understand it's not the end of the journey. There is an afterlife. It's not just here or now party and be merry for tomorrow we die. There is something to be said afterwards. This is what's being said over here. So if you think about this, there's two audiences then, right? Right. There's the audience of the people who are listening, who know that they're slated for destruction, and their children essentially. The people who are not going to live know that ultimately there is hope to return, and the children, because no, we know that this is not the end of the journey, because we'll get there. That's what's happening in the same parasha. Just a remarkable, like a wrinkle within the command, which is just beautiful, beautiful idea. Over here, I want to just shift into a very different idea, which is the idea of Rav Eliyahu Kitov. Rav Aram Eliyahu Kitov. Rav Kitov wrote Sefer Toada, which is actually translated famously into what we call the Book of our Heritage, which is a fabulous set of svarim about the months of the Jewish year. Very worthwhile. I have a special connection because in our community, when I was growing up, his daughter lived in our community. Her name is, she just passed away just this year, unfortunately. Her name was Naama Notman. So, world famous artist. And she had a profound effect on me, just as a very, very unique individual. So one of the very unique individuals I've ever met, and a very gentle soul. So anyway, I would a lot of times hear her father's Torah, Rav Kitov's Torah, from her, through her when I was growing up. And so Rav Kitov points out a very interesting point, and that is that let's put ourselves into the shoes of Israel at this point in time. They're here in the desert. They've made a big boo-boo, right? They basically said that they don't trust Hashem, right? They basically said Hashem said you should go into the land. They said no, thank you, and Hashem has made it very clear that they made a mistake. So at this point in time, you know, not only should they be concerned about their entry into the land of Israel, they might also be concerned that, well, maybe God is going to leave us, is going to abandon us. Now, what were the three mechanisms of protection in the desert? The three things that Hashem provided supernaturally were. It was the Ananakov, which was the clouds. What else? The man and the be'er. So they had protection, they had water, and they had food, right? And we know famously Chazal said that each one of those were in the schus of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, right? Which is why when Miriam dies, the be'er goes away, right? We know about these various mechanisms. So in a certain sense, the Rav Kitov says that when they sinned, there was a real concern on their behalf that Hashem would sort of pull the carpet from underneath them, and they would have no protection. So Hashem gives them three metaphoric mitzvahs, which give them the sense that they are still under His protection. He gives them a mitzvah which relates to a liquid libation, which is the libations, the wine libations, challah, which is about the grain and the food, and tzitzis, which is the covering. In a certain sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm letting you know that in the schus of these, it's sort of like credit. Right, in the schus of the future things you will do, I'm going to continue my protection, even though I've just slated you for 40 years in the desert. Which is a very, very profoundly different way of looking at it, because it's not so much about the future, but rather about the now. But the now is dependent on the commitment to the future. That's the way he looks at it. I think sometimes we we read the story with the end in mind, of course they were protected. Well, naturally, why would Hashem abandon them? But imagine you were in that place. Imagine Hashem had just told you that you're in the desert for 40 years. If I was in time out, you know, would I be getting meals? I don't know. How would I know that? Right, so this is what Hashem is gently giving them is these three levels of comfort, which are going to be their credit for continued protection. But it gets better. So I want to just to focus on another few tiers over here, which are unbelievably astounding. One is on the most basic level. What halachically does this actually mean? We're giving wine libations. So what does that actually mean? Were they not giving wine libations up till now? Is this yesh me'ayim, meaning to say if they had not sinned by the meraglim, would there not be wine libation? What really goes on over here? So Rav Avadya Sefornos points out halachically the following: that up till now, on a communal sacrifice, you would have to bring a wine libation. Meaning to say, when you would bring a korban tamid, which is the morning sacrifice, you'd have to bring a wine libation, the morning and a mincha accompanying it. However, on individual sacrifices, you would not. Individual sacrifices would just be the animal itself, as we see with Noach, as we see with Avraham, as we see from time immemorial, that there was no wine accompanying the individual korban. What the Torah is saying now, halachically, what is shifted in, we'll call it, the protocol of korbanos, is the individual korban now requires wine with it, right? So that's what the Sephardim points out, on the halachic perspective. That's what's really actually changing. If that's true, what we have to ask ourselves is a little more deep now. Now we need to dig a little deeper. So why specifically wine? Why is it that wine is that tikkun, not just, we'll call it out on a klal, on the communal level, but on the individual, personal level that needs to accompany the korbanos? Okay, so that's the framework we're working with. So I'd like to explore with you three last ideas, which investigate this from very different perspectives. One of them is going to be semi-halachic, one is Kabbalistic, and one is historic. Okay, so let's try to investigate this. So the first thing is the following: we turn to the mitzvah of Bikurim. What is Bikurim again? Just to recap, refresh our minds. Bikurim is a separate mitzvah. Bikurim is actually the mitzvah mentioned in Parshas Kisavo much later on in the Torah, and it is that when a farmer has new crops, what he does is he or she will tie a string over the newest fruit, and when that fruit comes to full fruition, they'll take the first fruits and bring them in a basket to Jerusalem, and there's a whole ceremony. There would be a statement they would make, the whole business, they present it to the kohen, and it's one of the 24 matnas kohuna. It's one of the things which go to the shevet kohuna as the farmer comes up. So it's interesting, in the Mishnah which describes this, so listen to how Chazal frame the mitzvah of Bikurim in Source 7. We just finished Seder Zrayim in the Shul, and this is towards the end of the Masechta. Ketzed mafrish na Bikurim. How would one separate the Bikurim, the first fruits? Yored adam b'soich sadehu, a person would enter into their fields, v'ro'e teino shibichro, eshko shibiker, rimon shibiker. A person sees, let's say, a fig which is sprouting, a grape, a cluster of grapes, or a pomegranate, which is really just freshening now, just ripening. Koshroi begemi, a person would tie a thread over it. Vo'omer arei olai bikurim, and the person would say, "This becomes my. Well, I have accepted upon myself the elu. Thank you. No, these should be bikurim." So he's designating these as bikurim. Once again, a person needs to re-declare them. And mikra bikurim occurs again when one person actually plucks them when they fully ripen. What is interesting is note, what are the three fruits the Mishnah uses as examples? Just interesting that Chazal choose these three fruits. They are? Well, they are the fig, the grape, and the pomegranate, which is interesting because that happens to be those are the three things that the Meraglim took. Isn't that interesting? Right? The Meraglim took three things back from the land, and they were the cluster of grapes, and the fig, and the pomegranate. So it's interesting that Chazal are framing the mitzvah of Bikurim in a certain sense as almost like a Meraglim-esque experience, right? Interesting. Now remember Chazal, what was that?
It's also part of the Shulam.
Oh, true. You're 100% right.
Yeah, but that's the agricultural produce of the land of Israel. If you look at what the fruits are, the only thing you left out are olives and figs.
Good. So it's arbitrary, but might not be. You're right.
The kashrut like this. Either give only one prototype or mention all seven.
Correct. Meaning to say... Right. At this point in time, the Mishnah is picking and choosing. And it happens to be that picking and choosing the exact things which happen to be three out of seven. So this is what it is. So I'd like to just investigate the words of Rav Menachem Zemba. Rav Menachem Zemba, Hashem Yimkom Damai, was one of the Gedolim before the Holocaust, and I believe he perished in the Warsaw Ghetto. In the Warsaw Ghetto. And there's unbelievable stories about Rav Menachem Zemba, what happened during the Warsaw Ghetto. He's one of the people who has less press. The Eish Kodesh is more famous, right? The Pzeazetzner Rebbe has more press about his writings during the Holocaust. But it's fascinating to notice all the questions that Rav Menachem Zemba dealt with in the Holocaust and the Warsaw Ghetto. Nonetheless, in his writings, he has what's called Chidushe HaGarmaz on Bikurim, right? A very not as frequented Pirush that we're used to. And he says a very interesting notion in Source 9. He says the following. Isa b'shem ha'arizal. He quotes the Arizal, Rav Luria. Demitzos havas Bikurim hitikon lacheta meraglim. The Arizal says, Kabbalistically, when we bring the Bikurim, it is a fixing, it is a correction for the sin of the spies. Da'arei ha'meraglim hotziyu dibas pe'al ha'aretz, that the spies slandered the land. Ule mitzvah ha'Bikurim nitna mishum chibas ha'aretz. And the mitzvah Bikurim is an annual recognition of the beauty of the land. So every year we come back to the base of the Mikdash and we say, this is the beautiful land Hashem gave us. Right, because that is exactly what went wrong when the spies did the wrong thing. He says the reason why Chazal framing it only these fruits is as a recognition what we should be experiencing as we bring the Bikurim and we talk about the Shevach Haaretz, the beauty of the land of Israel. I mentioned on Shavuos, I heard from a friend many years ago when I was in Eretz Israel that the Rebbe of Chernobyl there was a very large Jewish community in Chernobyl in the days that it used to be livable, as was the practice in those days, the Chutz La'aretz communities would send a lot of money into the very ailing communities in Israel at the time. The economy was terrible at the time, very hard to make a living in Israel. So Chutz La'aretz would gather monies to support the yeshuv, and in response, from time to time, they would send back products from Israel to the European communities. And one day he received a bottle of wine, which was from Europe, and it was from Eretz Israel. And when offered to drink the wine, he refused to drink the wine. He didn't want to drink the wine. And so he said to him, Rebbe, you know, this is from Eretz Israel. Why don't you want to drink it? So he said, I don't want for a moment to taste the wine, and even for a moment in my head to think that it's not as good as the wineries we have here. Meaning to say, that's how sensitive he was to his notion about criticism of Israel. And what's being said over here is the Bikurim is that we have this natural check and this balance, which is to make sure that when we talk about the land of Israel, we're talking about the beauty of the land, which is coming into full definition. I think it is interesting that although the mitzvah Bikurim is not Nesachim, right? The wine libations is not it's not the same thing. It is interesting, what is the time frame of when the Meraglim sinned? Just what does the Torah say? Yom Bikurei Anavim. It was the day where the grapes were freshening. So it really, the Torah itself is saying, the Bikurei Anavim is the season, which is why the Bikurim, in a certain sense, is the tikkun, which now leads us to a very interesting notion, that if that's true, maybe the bringing of the wine libations, as Dr. Yeager was saying, is related to the wine itself or the grapes which they were slandering. Maybe we can go in that direction with Rav Menachem Zemba's idea. So let's take it to the next level. So
there's one more point to reinforce this. Bikurim is the only mitzvah tluya ba'aretz, as opposed to maisus, etc. in Truma, that has a verbal recitation.
Interesting.
To counter the dibarov, which is a verbal.
Very interesting. Meaning say,
Tevidu doesn't say anything about the Meraglim, though. They don't bring it up.
No, but it's Shrach and Eretz
Yisrael. That's true. That's true. So what Dr. Yeager is pointing out is that when you bring Trumas, when you bring Maestros, you do say there's a Hafrasha,
right.
But there's no historical context to what you're saying, which is perhaps because their sin was through actual speech. Last two ideas, which are very remarkable in and of themselves, and that is, I just happened to notice this last night, so I added this last minute. This is from the works of the Emunah Sitecha Rav Wolfson. He has a very beautiful idea, and that is, he just asks a basic question. How many spies were there again?
12
spies, right? How many of them brought fruit out? 10 of them. Right, we know that there's a whole, the Rashi explains, that 8 of them were carrying the grapes, because it was a very large cluster, one a fig, one a pomegranate. But that means to say, who wasn't carrying?
Yeshua
and Kalev. But wait a second. Didn't Moshe Rabbeinu say, you should take from the fruit of the land? Right, meaning, did they get the instructions mixed up there? What happened that they weren't taken out? We understand the spies, the 10 spies were giving the bad message, right? We know that. But Moshe Rabbeinu was pretty unequivocal when he said that you should go, that you should take from the fruit of the land. So did they have different fruits? Do we not know about the fruits they took? What happened to their fruits? Right? Basic question. Once you think about it, it does sound a little fishy, right? They should have brought out something else at least, right? So he suggests something which is very, very unique. Very unique. I've never seen this anywhere else. Says the Rav Wolfson in Source 10, V'hinei yesh lamar davar chadash. I'd like to suggest something which is new. It is very new. Moshe Rabbeinu commanded to take the fruit of the land. His kavanah was not that everybody should bring back, we'll call them museum pieces for everybody to see. By eating them, by imbibing the fruits of the land itself, they would absorb the kedusha in those fruits, and that would help them in their journey, in their mission. Moshe Rabbeinu's command was, when you're there, consume the produce, because there's something unique and special about the produce in the land, and that's going to help you on your mission. And who listened to him? Only Yoshua and Kalev. The people who didn't listen to him were the other 10. What did they say? We're going to bring this back and show everybody. Therefore, they, in a certain sense, missed out what they possibly, the chizuk, meaning, if, let's say they would have eaten. They may have had just a little more of something from the land of Israel in them, which would have prevented them from having said so much about them. When they took it out, he actually says, Kabbalistically, it's almost like they emptied those fruit of that Kedusha. They became the narrator, the meta narrator of the experience, rather than the experience itself. Just think about this in life. How many times do we leave an experience to talk about an experience without actually having experienced it? How many times are we commentating on a situation we're in without ever being there? How many times are we taking pictures without actually experiencing the experience, right? That's what the meraglim are doing here. If you think about it, one of my pet peeves is when a chas and a kala are walking down the aisle, and as they get to the thing, the photographer tells them to walk backwards so they can take a picture again. I'm like, that is absolutely ludicrous. The photographer is supposed to be the person capturing the moment, not making the moment, right? You're not supposed to recreate moments. You're supposed to capture moments. So capture the moment and do your job, right? Meaning, stop bringing fruits out to talk about it. Do it. That was what they were missing, right? They missed that opportunity, which is why says Rav Wolfson, very fascinating point. That is that when it says Vayomim Yomei Bikurei Anavim, it says it, it says it without a yud. The word Anavim is spelt chaser. There's a missing yud there. It's Anavim. It could read actually Anavam, really, in the Torah, which means to say that there was a dimension of the grapes, there's a dimension in the fruits which was lacking. The yud, when we know that there's a yud and a hay. The hay represents this world. The yud represents the world to come. There was something lacking in their grapes. Why? Because the way they treated them was as a museum piece. I remember going to Prague and going through a tour in the Jewish quarter, and everybody's walking around with all these non-Jews are walking around with these cardboard yarmulkes, and they're talking about these things which used to exist that are called Jews, and they used to live around these places and so on. And I felt like screaming out, "I'm one of them! We're alive! We're still here!" But anyway, so they're bringing out the things, and it's a dry exhibit. Right? And they've lost the yud of the anavim, which is what's happened over here. So he says that's maybe why it is that that we have to bring the nesachim, because what Hashem is saying is the tikkun for misunderstanding what the fruits of the land are is to take those fruits and to elevate them. You take them, and now every time you bring a korban, even a personal korban, you're going to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the process of elevating and bringing it up on Mami's back, because that's what the fruits have inside of them. They are not just things you look at in showcases. Right? It's, that famous song about the Torah, right? So I was made way back in 1852 by an honest scribe, a God-fearing Jew, who did his work with honesty, with feeling, and with pride. He was known in Kiev as Yankel, the scribe. And it's a whole story about this Torah, which survives the Holocaust and becomes a museum piece in America. And how somebody recognizes the Torah and pulls it back and starts using it again. And that this is what's happening over here. Stop making Israel a museum piece. Start using it. Start becoming involved in it. That's what the tikkun of the Nisachim is. Last idea, and this, I think, is perhaps the most remarkable of them all. Okay? I'm sure we've seen some very unusual things here, but this is the most remarkable of them all. There's a machlokes in the actual Midrash Halacha, which is the Sifrei on this section, whether or not they did Nesachim, whether they did these wine libations from here on inwards, meaning year two in the desert, or when they got into the land of Israel. It sounds like, whether the Pasuk says, only when they get to the land of Israel, but that's not necessarily true. Listen to what the Midrash says in Source 11. Taberel b'nei Israel, kisavol eretz moshu esechem. Speak to Israel when you come to the land, as Rashi said, when you get there. So Rabbi Shmuel Omer, bo hakos lelamedcha shelo nischayavu Yisrael b'nesachim ela mibiasam mibiasam le'eretz ve'elach. Achar Yerusha v'yeshiva hakos v'daber. Says Rabbi Shmuel, it's only when you get to the land of Israel, which is what Rashi had said, right? Biser lohem shekonsu la'aretz. You're going to get into the land. However, Amale Rabbi Akiva, Levishu Omer Shabbos Hula Hashem B'chol Moshu Esechem. Wait a second. The Torah tells us that Shabbos is to be kept B'chol Moshu Esechem in all your dwelling places. Shomani Ben Ve'eretz Ben Mechutz La'aretz. Shabbos isn't location dependent. B'chol Moshu Esechem doesn't mean to say only when you get to the land of Israel. Shabbos is international, right? It's one of these things. So similarly, the Nesachim, says Rabbi Akiva, is international.
Which implies immediately,
but how does that work exactly? I mean, they're in the desert after all, right? So, Rabbi Akiva, what exactly do you expect them to do? Are they going to suddenly, you know, dig in the Sinai sand and start planting grapes before they move to their next encampment? What is going on over here, Rabbi Akiva? What exactly do you expect them to be doing? So, the answer to this is found in a very obscure source. Obscure in the sense that we don't usually see it. Not that it's obscure because it's an obscure mefarish, but this is the Targum Yerushalmi on Shir HaShirim. The Targum Yerushalmi says in the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim in Source 12, Eshkol HaKoyfer Dodi Li B'Charmei En Gedi. It's talking about the beauty of the vineyards of my beloved in the Charmei En Gedi, in the vineyards of En Gedi, in the area of En Gedi. That's interesting. We don't usually think of En Gedi as vineyards, but nonetheless, this is what the Pasuk seems to be saying, and so it's a terms of endearment of two beloveds. So Targum Yerushalmi says the following, really a very interesting thing. Take a look at the end, towards the end of the first line. It's all in Aramaic, but let's try to crack it. Umani yos benoy ad aron kohanaya lemikrav kurbana al madbacha. So, by the way, anytime you see a dalet in Aramaic, you just switch it with a zayin. It makes it a little easier, okay? So, the children of Aaron will bring korbanos al madbacha on mizbacha, right, which is the mizbeach. Ulanascho yaschamra al kurbanaya. And they're going to bring the nesachim, they're going to bring the wine libations with their korbanos. Uminan hava lohoin chamra lenascho. But where exactly did they get wine to bring the libations? Haloi inon b'madbara, were they not in the desert? Loi asar kashar levei dera, not a place to, what's dera? Zera, right? Switch the out of design. It's not a place that we can plant things. V'af loi tainin v'gufnin v'rimonim, and they don't have those three fruits. Elo havon ozlin l'charmei ein gedi, v'noz bin mitamon asklin de invin. What would happen? They would go in. They would send reconnaissance missions into En Gedi, into cross Jordan, into Israel to bring out wine or grapes, and the otzrin minhoin chamra, and they would make from them wine. Which means, for 39 years in the desert, Bnei Israel would send in meraglim, so to speak, send in spies on the Trans Jordan to bring out grapes to actually bring the Nesachim. Now, think about what a different paradigm that means. That means that all the days in the desert, this mitzvah was in action all the time. And now, and it makes so much sense. Let's think about why this mitzvah is given right now. According to this Targum Yerushalmi, of course it's given right now. Because you just went into the land, and you just brought out the fruit, and you slandered that fruit, and you said the land's big and giants and terrible people in the whole business, and we can never conquer it. So you know what you're going to do? I'm going to send you in all the time while you're in the desert to bring out fruits again. But this time you're going to bring it on the Mizbeach. Do you see what's going on over here?
Antidote.
The ultimate antidote to what's the word to the Chet HaMeraglim is actually reusing, doing the exact same action, but now for the Nesachim, now for the wine libations. So the person who pointed this out to me is a friend of mine, Rabbi Menachem Rosenbaum, who lives in Chicago, and he said maybe that's why the symbol of the Israeli Misrad HaTayarut, which is the Ministry of Tourism, is the grape bearers. Now that's a bad thing. That's not a good thing to use as your symbol, right? Don't use the grape bearers because that always represents the bad people, right? That represents the Meraglim. So he says, maybe, and that's a little bit of a stretch, maybe when we think about the grape bearers, maybe we should not be thinking about the first time they came out bearing the grapes on their shoulders. Maybe we should be thinking about the next 38 years worth of grape bearers who are bringing it back as a tikkun, as an appreciation of the land, not as a depreciation of the land. Very brilliant idea. I'll take questions afterwards. Rechanim nekash amorat zagorish baruch lezakos zera lefiachach yibol and torah mitzvah shenemar nechavetz man sikoyak deal torah v'yadir.